Okay, so today on Kindled, I'm chatting with Hillary Morgan Ferrer. Hillary, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, so this is your second time back. You did an episode with me on your first book, Mama Bear Apologetics, and now we're going to talk about the follow-up to that, which is your Mama Bear Apologetics Guide to Sexuality. So, I love that you guys did this book. I've had a lot of people who follow me on Instagram message and be like, "Have you heard of this? Is this a good book?" I'm like, "Yes, if it's coming from Hillary, it's solid. You know, just it's great." And I'm so glad you wrote it and produced this resource because it is absolutely insane to me how this has become, you know, such a topic that we have to deal with as moms, and we have to start addressing it with our kids. Unfortunately, younger than most of us would like to, you know, and anyway, so I know we're going to get into it, but before we talk about that, why don't you share with people who you are and what you do?
So my name is Hillary Ferrer, and I am president of Mama Bear Apologetics. It's a ministry I founded probably back in 2015, 2016. And our goal is really, we realized that there were a lot of moms that just were not getting apologetics training. And but at the same time, they're the ones that are getting all the questions first. Like, I think I saw an article that said that moms of young children get more questions than the Queen of England does during an interview. So it's just like constant question after question. So they really are getting all the spiritual questions first. And so that's the demographic that I think God just called me to help equip. And I know some people know this, some people don't, that my husband and I don't have children for various health reasons. But so I thought, oh my gosh, Lord, you can't be calling me to do this. This is nobody's going to listen to me. But he kind of impressed upon me that I have something that the average mom doesn't have, which is time to research. And so I take my job of being a mama bear to help equip the other mama bears out there, that I can do all the reading and kind of condensing the information so that y'all don't have to, because you have a lot more on your plate that you need to be doing. So that's basically what our ministry does.
I love that so much. And I know this isn't what we're going to talk about, but I just love how you shared that you are still spiritually mothering, you know, in the church and in the body of Christ by doing what you're doing. And that is the call. You know, I think obviously if you are a mom and you have children, then that is your call. But it is a call to all women to spiritually mother. And so I think sometimes when, you know, there's these mommy wars, right, of competition or competing about what's the right calling, or should I work, or should I only stay home? You know, I think we miss it sometimes, the forest through the trees of it's not so much about all these little particulars, but are you actually fulfilling your calling to spiritually mother, whether that is your own children or the children in your church or the children across the world, as you're doing through this book, you know, and children of believers. And I think that's just really awesome that you're doing that.
Thank you. And if your children have friends, well, guess what? They are in your sphere of influence too, because when they're in your house, it's your rules. And so whatever you want to say to your kids, their friends get to overhear as well.
100%. Yes. So, your newest book, The Guide to Sexuality, the subtitle is Empowering Your Kids to Understand and Live Out God's Design. This book really covers a wide range of topics underneath the umbrella of sexuality. And just to give listeners some idea of what's covered in here, you know, you guys obviously talk a lot about sex, gender, you know, even gender ideology, sex ed in our school system, language and morality of the sexual agenda, the gender-bred person, which I think is a funny, hilarious title there that you gave that. Sex
Well,
positive.
that's one of the actual curricula that are out there.
Oh, I had heard of the gender unicorn. I don't think I realized it was that was their actual
They
curriculum.
have several different ones. They've got the gender unicorn. I think there's like a gender hippopotamus and a gender,
Oh my
like maybe
gosh.
people are trying to like not copyright infringe on
Oh,
other people, but I think the genderbread person was the first
yeah.
one.
Okay, gotcha. And yeah, and I mean, just porn, the pornification of our culture, same-sex attraction, purity culture, just so many awesome topics that we cannot avoid. You know, we cannot avoid. And you know, my listeners know my kids are still relatively young, 9, 7, and 4, but we've had, you know, a fair amount of conversations. My kids understand what homosexuality is and being gay, and that, you know, some people in the world believe that they can change their gender or they can decide what their gender is, and it's not determined by God. And I guarantee I didn't know any of that at the age of 9 or 7. Like, I didn't need to at the time, but They do in this world. And I just am so passionate about equipping them as much as I can without, you know, oversharing, of course, but giving them what they need to be prepared to stand firm in the face of these lies that culture is throwing at them. And these resources from you guys and your ministry just very much reinforce and encourage me to do that. So, So I guess on that note, I want to talk to you about a few of the hot topics in this book because, you know, I guess really all of them are hot topics.
We poke all the hornet's nests in this book.
You really do, which is what I love because I'm all about poking the hornet's nest when the hornet's nest is literally Satan himself. So, but I want to start with national sex education curriculum. We just mentioned it. And the standards and how some of that is changing, what parents, you know, maybe have heard whispers of, probably seen some videos online, but maybe don't fully understand, like, what is actually different about, you know, people say, well, I went to kindergarten, I went to first grade, you know, I made it through. But the reality is, like, what is happening in our schools today is not the same as when you were
in school.
You made it
through 20, 30, 40 years ago. You did not make it through what's going on right now.
Right. And so it's like a very, it's not an equal comparison. We need to be careful not to assume that it's just the same old public school. It's very different. And be educated, you know, regardless of where your kids are, you certainly need to know what's in there, especially if your kids are in public school. But can you talk to us some about how those standards have changed, what that curriculum looks like, and what are some of the lies coming out of that?
Yeah, so absolutely. One of the first things I want to say, if you want to take a look at these for yourself, they're very easy to find. You just search the National Sex Education Standards, NSES, or you might even say the new National Sex Education Standards. 2020, I believe, was the most recent one, which was really nice that it came out right when we were writing this book, because a lot of the things that are included in that new version are things that a lot of conservatives and Christians have been saying, they're teaching this, they're teaching that. And people are like, I don't see it anywhere. They gave us the most beautiful gift by actually putting it in the standards. And I would say, instead of reading through all like the actual, well, we call it in Texas, they were teaks, but instead of reading through every single part of the curriculum, what I encourage people to do is read the guiding mission and principles statement. The guiding mission and principle statement says, it's basically them saying, this is the worldview that we're coming from. And this is the worldview that we're using in order to teach sexual activity. And so some of the things that has in there are that it's perfectly normal. And it's not just normal. It's the only way to really find your healthy sexuality is basically to explore all the options. And they were saying, you know, people need to try on different identities and sexual identity is not exempt from this exploration. So basically I said, have we all been doing it wrong? are we all like sexually unhealthy because we didn't try all the things, but yet this is what kids are being told. They talk about the use of language and how you need to listen to the young people, how they want to be called, and you have to refer to them the way they want to be. So it's not as much this idea of teaching information or teaching truth, but it's helping kids to explore all these different things and deciding for themselves. And there's an aspect where kids do need to have room to explore who they are, to find their identity. But in the past, that was limited to, am I an artist? Am I a jock? Am I, you know, an intellectual? Do I want to study psychology? It wasn't in who am I fundamentally as a human. And so there's several years back, I was doing a study for one of my old bosses that was looking at these four different types of society where it went all the way from like 100% permissive, where there's like basic, it's like anarchy, there's no rules whatsoever, and everybody has to figure it out for themselves, all the way to the really, really authoritarian, where you have no choices and you have to, you know, follow the line. You know, this would be like the really strict communist societies where everything is controlled. And what they saw was just the study I was looking specifically on was on suicide. Where do they see the most suicides? And it was in the absolutely permissive. I don't have any ground to stand on. And the absolutely authoritarian, I don't have any choices. And somewhere in between there, where you have certain things that are absolute and certain things you don't have to figure out, but then you get to explore in a healthy way different things. The idea that I had so many identity crises when I was in high school. If I had to figure out if I was also a boy or a girl or something in between, I have a slide that's got font that's like 6-point font on the whole thing that a friend of mine came up with. that is considered A through E of all the gender options that people can have. Basically, according to queer theory, it's like you can have a different word for every single possible thing. Think about all the colors that you see like in paint stores instead of just saying blue and green. Think about every single shade in between there. And they're having to figure out where on that gender spectrum with every single shade, where do they fall in and what is the name for that? And that is just absolutely, in order to like find who you are, you have to have a jumping off point. And like, we've all watched those YouTubes of like cats and stuff that try to jump and the thing flies out from underneath them. They like end up just plopping on the floor. That's kind of a visual one of what I see going on is kids have no way to really reach out and find who they are because they have no solid foundation of such a basic thing as who am I as a human, as a male or as a female, and who should I be looking for to marry? Like, those are just very fundamental questions for my dad always said, you know, the basic questions as a 20 something that people have to answer is what do I want to, or, you know, late teens and 20s, what do I want to do? And who am I going to marry? Like, that's your job in your 20s to find that. But if we can't even decide who counts as a potential marriage partner, that's just, I don't know. It just, first grade got a lot more confusing, I'll just say.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, and I've even seen, you know, in my 9-year-old, even though she's still very young, like she's starting to think about the things that she really enjoys. And she sees that I do web and graphic design. And she's like intrigued by that. And she's like, maybe I want to do that. I want to look into that.
Yeah.
And then she'll go, well, I don't know, maybe I don't want to do that. And she'll just have some anxiety. And I mean, like a little bit, not a lot, but just I'll see her flip-flop back and forth between like, what do I want to do, this or that? And the uncertainty and feeling like I'm getting locked into something my whole life. And that's only in what she like does as a professional career, if she does something, not who she is. And and I see just that kind of tug of war inside herself with something that is as superficial as what you do. It does matter, but it is not like who you are, right? Yeah. But I think a lot of us as Christians, or maybe those who didn't grow up with this kind of uncertainty, can't even begin to really understand what that does to a young person to have absolutely no certainty or foundation on who you are, not even what gender you are. Yeah. You know, I mean,
it's so disorienting, like so completely disorienting of just as being a human. And even like what's becoming a lot more popular now is this idea. I think of they've got, I don't know, Therian, if that's just the one particular kind, but you'll have people who identify as animals as well. Or, and I'm trying to remember all the names for this. There's a kind where it's fictitious characters. I identify more as a fairy or as a, all these different things. And I remember watching a makeup show. So I love competition shows. And so they have one called Glow Up. That's a makeup competition. And this girl always had kind of like the pointed, like fairy sprite ear pieces on. And she was just saying that how much she loved the idea of just changing up what it meant to be human. And I thought that's exactly what's going on, is we are changing what it means to be human. And man, if human is created in God's image, then what is the enemy trying to do? He's trying to destroy the very image of God in humanity. And people are rejecting even their identity as humans.
Right. 100%. Yes. And that's the end game, right?
I want to interrupt this episode to tell you about our first sponsor, and that is W2 Beef Co. W2 is a husband and wife team that is selling grass-fed, grain-finished beef in bulk, shipped for free, straight to your door. Kevin is a fourth-generation farmer who has been farming and ranching for 15 years. Their beef is raised on the wide open pastures at the Kansas-Oklahoma state line. They currently specialize in selling bulk, so this is your chance to stock your deep freezer with quality meat. If you love hosting parties, meal prepping for your family, or having steaks on hand for the grill, they are the meat providers for you. Like I mentioned, they ship straight to your doorstep for free. So this saves you a trip to the grocery store, hauling the meat home, wondering where it's sourced from, what it has been injected with. You can forego all of those stresses by ordering from W2 Beef. And I was shipped an eighth of a cow, which is now stocking my freezer, which A, gives me so much peace of mind knowing that we have quality beef in our freezer that's going to last me months and is so well raised and sourced. I don't have to stress going, what is in this? Where is it from? Who raised it? What did they put into it? We really do not know if we can even trust the packages in the stores these days. And there's just a lot of concerns about our food supply and how that is going to be tampered with in the future. But the other thing I'll say is that I have eaten these steaks. I've had this ground beef. It is excellent in terms of quality, taste, texture. It is not tough. It is soft. It is excellent quality beef. So you will not be disappointed when you check out W2 Beef. Scroll down in show notes. You'll find the link for W2 Beef Co. Check them out at W2BeefCo.com.
And, you know, I asked about the national standards for education on sexuality, or mm-hmm. maybe I'm saying that backwards.
In SES, National Sex Education Standards.
There you go. Yeah. But we probably should have began actually a little bit before that with, you have a chapter called Sex is Spelled Worldview, W-O-R-L-D-V-I-E-W, which I think is very clever, but also 1 billion percent essential to this conversation, that this is not a conversation that we can have devoid of worldview. We can't have the conversation downstream at what is a man, what is a woman. We have to go back to, well, who is God? Who am I in light of that? Right? Mm-hmm. Why am I here? All of those worldview questions. And I think that the issue is that you have Christians who actually ultimately do not hold to a biblical worldview.
Yeah.
And that is
Barna
that,
has shown us that.
Yes. Right. And so then there is confusion downstream mm-hmm. about the answers to all those questions. And you have, you know, I get questions all the time from people who are torn about how to approach certain things, or they've been told by their family members, you know, that, okay, like my niece is now a boy, and how am I supposed to deal with that? You know, at Thanksgiving or Christmas, do I use the new pronouns, or what, you know, how do I actually engage in those relationships? And I think that's where people are, this stuff is the rubber's meeting the road, and people are looking for advice and looking for, what does the Bible say? I hope that's where they land ultimately, but I think far too often they're kind of looking at, you know, what does the Gospel Coalition say is the loving thing to do, right?
Like, oh dear.
You know, just like going to a popular source or Christian mm-hmm. evangelicalism, and you never know how some author on some website today is going to land and say, well, you know, I think we all really just need to be understanding. And it actually wasn't it was Christianity Today that said,
I was going to say,
I think the Gospel Coalition would still stand firm on that for the most part. But Christianity Today did have an article saying, you know, we all need to acknowledge how quickly these things are changing. It's all changing so fast. And it's like, no, nothing has changed, actually. Mm-mm. Like, nothing in truth has changed.
Language is changing, and people's perception of truth is changing. That's changing really fast, but reality isn't changing.
Mm-hmm.
I would say with that, so the idea of sex being a worldview, it answers so many different questions. And I think one of the big questions that we have in our society is, says who? Who is mm-hmm. the authority? Because it's like, if we look at what are we? Does God exist or does God not exist? Because if God does not exist, then we are not accountable to any other higher authority. Or are we created beings or are we evolved beings? Because if we're created, that means that we were created with a purpose. I mean, people don't have they don't like just roll up a thing of clay, throw it on the ground, and be like, look what I created. No, mm-hmm. they have an idea of what they're doing. And they say, I carefully crafted this. When you have a creation, mm-hmm. it means that it has a purpose. And one of the kind of fancy $2 words for that is telos. What mm-hmm. is the telos? It's the end goal. What is this supposed to be? What is it supposed to do? And we were created with a purpose, according mm-hmm. to the biblical worldview. But if we're just, you know, the blind, result of blind chance throughout millennia, well, then we're not really held to any kind of purpose. It really can be whatever you want. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you look at the rock formation somewhere and you're like, I see a wolf. Well, I see a horse. Well, it can be either. It's just this random thing of whatever your perception is of it. That wasn't created to be like anything, not like, say, I'm going to say Mount Roosevelt. That's not right. What's the mountain with all the presidents? Rushmore.
There you go.
And so like that would be a Christian thing. What is male and female? Are we created in the image of God? And if we are, then we can't change what it means to be male and female, again, because of the authority. And then one of the biggest things that kind of goes throughout the entire book is, what is my worth? And does my body matter? Because that's what you'll find with almost all of the sexuality stuff is people think that they're having all this freedom.
Right.
And really, I love the quote that Amy has in the sex positivity chapter. She said, the skeleton lurking in the closet of sex positivity is that your body and what you do with it don't matter. So basically, it's robbing us of our value, of our inherent worth. Because, I mean, we just look at, you know, pieces of art. The Mona Lisa, you can't just walk up and touch the Mona Lisa or draw a little mustache on it. But your kids' art, you know, at some school, you can. Not that your kids' art isn't wonderful, but it's not the Mona Lisa. And so the more protected something is, the more guarded something is, the more value. That's how you can tell how valuable it is,
right,
is how guarded and protected it is. And so that's another piece of the Christian worldview, that if I think that my sexuality doesn't need to be guarded, that is a worldview statement of my body and what I do with it don't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true. And what do you find, what have you found in your research and in all of your conversations with people, where are they the most deceived in this conversation? Would you say it's at the level of the worldview question in conversation, where they just don't have a biblical worldview? Or is it like they are being argued away from that by some compelling position from the sex positive people? Or, you know, what's your assessment of that?
I would say, if I were to summarize it in one sentence, I can say it in both a positive and both a negative. It was something my husband and I, when we were discussing, he said this, I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I'd put that in the book. Is he said, you can't flourish in what you weren't created for. And so, like, we could reverse that, say we can only flourish in what we were created for, but you can't flourish in what you weren't created for. So there's a conference that I did where I was speaking to a lot of young people, and I kind of stumbled across this analogy, because I can't remember where I found it, but there's something called a strangler fig, also I think also ficus. And what it is the seeds grow from the ground, but what they do is they grow around a tree. And so it's usually in forests where competition for sunlight is really big. And what they do is they start stealing all the nutrients from the core tree. And eventually, if it stays like that forever, you'll end up with this hollow tree where all the vines are wrapped around it. And they're like, it's basically a hollow tree, but it still looks like it's the same shape because they've basically taken all the nutrients and broken down that original tree. So I had pictures of that up on the screen. And I asked the kids, I said, who thinks that it's loving for that tree to argue that their identity with this strangler vine? The strangler vine is kind of like an ideology that you wrap on yourself, kind of like in chapter 2 that I talk about, I believe, of just chapter 4 that I talk about how we a lot of these, it's not an identity. They are taking on an ideology that is damaging to them. So I said, how many of you would argue for this tree that you think the most loving thing to do is to go along with this idea of the strangler fig that's going around them? Do you think that's for the tree's flourishing? How many of you would argue for the right of diversity for any tree to have this strangler fig going around them? It's like, what happens is you become a shell of who you were created to be. And it might even feel like you're stronger for a period of time because you've got this extra layer that's around you, but ultimately it's eating you from the inside because you were not created for that. And so that kind of gave them a picture of what it would look like to have something that someone says, oh, it's loving to go along with this, but that is not the loving thing to do. If you know that this is not for their benefit, it's not for their flourishing. Now, not to say that we need to just be like, this is going to harm you, and try to just throw all these truth bombs and have them believe us. I give the example of something called, or do you know what Stockholm syndrome is?
Yeah.
So Stockholm syndrome is when someone has been taken captive, they've been kidnapped by somebody, but the person that they've been taken captive by, they form such a strong bond that they actually fight from being released from them. So they form such a tight relationship with their abuser, with their captor. And so the only way to get them to be free is you have to establish a level of trust that surpasses whatever this misgiven trust is in this other person. And so that is how we need to be treating people who have been taken captive by these ideologies. We can't just yell at them and say, oh, well, that, you know, that person wants your harm. You know, that person next to them is saying, see, I told you they'd say that. What you have to do is you have to wrap yourself in so much love and build that relationship to where you slowly get them to inch a little further and a little further and a little further away from that ideology. And at that point, your love needs to be more tangible than whatever this fake love, this unhealthy, destructive love was of the person that they were with. And I think it's the same thing with these ideologies of how we have to treat them. We can't just go telling them, you know, how dangerous and how bad this is for them. They're not going to believe us. They have to feel the love first.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I think that is the hardest part about it is, you know, while they've got someone whispering in their ear, See, of course, you know, of course I told you they would say that. I told you they didn't love you as they are. They as you are, they don't accept you. They want you to change. You're not good enough. Yes. And while you're saying, no, like, I love you. And that's why I can't agree with changing your pronouns. That's why I won't say this other thing, because I don't believe that's truth. And anything that's not truth is a lie. And I don't want to lie to you. I don't lie to people I love, you know, and no matter how lovingly you say it, you know that they're going to feel and interpret that rejection of, you know, kind of abiding by their language, adopting their standards and their definitions. They're going to read that as unloving. But the element that we have on our side that we can't forget is the power of the Holy Spirit and God's word. Right. And so I think in those relationships where, you know, and I have close relationships to people who are very, very much, you know, caught up in this deception. And while they know where I stand, I'm not hateful to them. You know, I'm not mean. I'm not condescending. I don't.
And you don't feel the need to say it every single time. They know where you stand, and then you can just have a relationship.
Yes. As much as possible. And even when they say things to me, like, you know, about an individual, well, they're, you know, they're using pronouns like someone is multiple people. I don't correct them every time, because again, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the person's name. Yeah. And I'm showing you by my refusal to adopt the pronouns, by continuing to say that person's name, not the pronouns you're wanting me to use. It's a subtle, you know, it's a little, not passive aggressive, but it's just subtly and quietly firm. No, I'm not going to do that. I will continue to refer to them and talk about them as human, because they are, but I'm not going to refer to them as multiple people, you know?
Yeah. Two things for that. Number one is there's a psychological thing called cognitive dissonance. It's where either your inner reality and your outer reality are not in, they're not coherent. It's like your body wants your mind, will, and emotions and treatment and all these things to be coherent. It wants them all to be the same. And so what happens when someone is experiencing cognitive dissonance, what a lot of times they'll do is they'll create a new social reality, meaning that in order to not be challenged on these beliefs, I need to surround myself with people who affirm these beliefs, and then there's no more dissonance. That's one thing. And I would say just, for people that are wondering what to do with this pronoun situation, practice talking about people with just their first names, because what it comes down to, there's a wonderful, wonderful book out there by Rod Dreher called Live Not by Lies. So good. And he talks about how like one of the subtle things that come in for like real soft totalitarianism, where it's like, it's not like some authority that's going to shoot you unless you do something. It's more like social norms that they will cancel you unless you do something, that we get tempted to just like speak little lies all the time. And so as Christians, we have to say, I'm just not going to live by lies. And, you know, and again, you don't have to use a pronoun, because all that tells you is how I'm going to refer to you when I'm talking about you to someone else. It has nothing to do with how I'm treating you as a person. Now, and one more thing is that they have found that when you don't affirm that social reality, and this would have to be someone that they have a very strong relationship with, like a parent, that's actually one of the things that will prevent them from completely going down the rabbit hole, because they can't completely have this new social reality.
Right.
There's always this little bit of truth that stands out there. And there's an article about a girl that just really attributes her mom to the reason why she didn't go down all the way into the transgender ideology, because her mom refused. Right. And now you don't have to just say, I'm refusing because this is truth. But like, I have another friend of mine who has a son that claims to be a woman. And so she says, I love you so much, and I know that you've thought about this for a long time and you've released who you think you are, but can I just say, I'm your mother. I'm the one who gave you that name. I prayed over that name. I had it for a purpose, and I am grieving right now. Will you give me the time? Because I'm not ready to lose my son. Can we stay in relationship, even if I won't do this for you? And then it's putting it back onto, this is what I need. And so I think a parent can really do that, because that is grieving the loss of a child in some ways. And so if you have a good relationship with your child, if you explain it in the way of like, this is something that I need time with, and I don't understand it. You've thought about it for a long time, but I need time to grieve, and I can't just make this switch immediately.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine being in that spot, but I think about, you know, Christopher Yuan, who I know you're familiar with, whose mother prayed for him for like 7 years. And
it was longer than that. Was like 20.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, never once did she like affirm his homosexual lifestyle. Never once did she say, you know, okay, I'm finally ready to, you know, to say this is good. Like, she didn't do that. And he knew she was praying, even though I'm sure there was years in there where he hated her and wanted nothing to do with her. And yet, just the faithfulness of a parent that is praying, that is refusing to live by lies. But while I will say at the same time, you know, like you said, those really close relationships have more power in that person's life. The ones that are less strong, like a friend or a college friend, those don't have that kind of sway. I mean, we've lost friends from college who, you know, came out as gay, and because my husband wouldn't affirm and say, I agree with this and I'm for this, said, no, like, I'm for you, but I don't agree with that lifestyle. And I'm not going to say that that is God's plan for you. We were cut out of their life. And so it's not always going to end, you know, I mean, standing firm, living not by lies doesn't always mean you get that little that beautiful ending that we all would hope for. I mean, a lot of times mm-hmm. it results in destruction, because that is what sin does. And so, you know, on that front as well, I would just say you're living for God and not man. And you have to trust God with people's souls, and you can continue to pray for those people. You can always be open and willing to open the relationship back up if they would like to. It's not us who closed it. Mm-hmm. It's that person, because we wouldn't affirm. And he probably never will. I mean, unless he comes to Christ, like, he's definitely not a believer. Like, he probably never will, but we continue to pray for him. We don't have hard hearts towards him. We're not mad at him, but we love him too much to lie. We love him too much to be those people who are just, you know, patting the sin, giving it a name and making it a home. Right. And so sometimes it does result in lost relationships, and that's hard and sad, but, at the end of the day, God is sovereign, and we cannot change people's hearts. You know, we don't have that power. That is on God, and that's the Holy Spirit alone. And so, you know, just to remove the burden of, I think sometimes people do things because they think that the power is in their hands, right? If I'm just loving enough, then I can open their eyes. You know, if I give in this area, then it'll keep me in relationship, and then I can share the gospel with them later, right? Like, no, you don't have to compromise to love people or to share the gospel and truth with them.
Yeah. And this is one of the things that I've had a lot of high school kids ask me about, because they want to know, what do I do with my friends? And so one of the big lies that goes around is saying that Christians are the ones that are rejecting them. And so I recommend, when you're in a situation like this, say, you know what? I know that there's probably nothing I can do to change your mind. And you know that there's probably nothing you can say to change my mind. And knowing this, that neither of us are going to change each other's minds, are you still willing to be in a relationship with me? Because I would still really love to be in a relationship with you.
Sure,
And then if they say no, you're like, that breaks my heart. Can I check back with you in maybe like 6 months? And then wait for the 6 months, and then go and say the same thing. I know that I'm not going to change your mind, and you know that you're not going to change mine, but I miss you, and I still really want to be in relationship with you. Will you allow me to do that? And if they just say, you know, unless you're willing to do this, no. And it makes it clear that you are not rejecting them. And it makes it clear that they were the one that cut that off. And I think that's important, to really give them the option of saying, neither of us are going to change our minds. So let's, can we please still be in a relationship? And I think that if you have a good relationship with someone, they're going to admire that honesty and just the clarity of where you both stand.
I want to share with you a sponsor that I love and you have heard about before if you listen to Kindled, and that is Alongside Them. Alongside Them provides catechisms for your children that actually engage your whole family as you learn either the Ten Commandments or the basics of the Christian faith together. So the basics catechism will ground your whole family in truths of the faith as you learn about God, Jesus, repentance, faith, sin, and more, while the Commandments catechism will reveal God's character to you and your kids. So the commandments expose our sinfulness by showing us our inability to keep them, and they point us to our Savior, Jesus Christ, who obeyed God's law perfectly. Both of those are must-haves, and I keep mine out on my back counter. You probably notice it in my Instagram stories when I share stuff from my kitchen. It is always out, and my kids flip through it, and I just love to have it in our home. If you already have both of those, then check out their Bible reading plan for kids. Those are very popular, and you'll get a very cute plan that your kid can follow along with, keeping their Bible as they read through scripture, either on their own or with you or as a family. Check out all of their products at comealongsidethem.com, and the code is still Kindled5 for $5 off your purchase. Again, that's comealongsidethem.com, Kindled5 for $5 off. I think so too. And I've gotten the opportunity in a relationship like that where it's closer than, you know, it's a very, very close relationship. And I think it's, we've kind of had that conversation without saying as much, you know, it's between the lines of, like, you know, we still see each other pretty regularly, and it's just, it's understood that we're still in relationship. We're still friends. We will still, give each other hugs. How are you? How's it going? Even though we believe completely opposite things about God, about his word, about gender, about sexuality. And, what I will say is that I've gotten the opportunity to share truth with that person, even in a kind of indirect way. Like, there's been a text thread, you know, where I've gotten to share, like, this is what God is showing me through this trial in my life as I'm sharing. Yeah. And that person has, like, loved, you know, hearted that message, that image of, you know, the devotion that I shared or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's shown me, even though I know that's a small thing, like, react to an image in a text, it has shown me, like, there's so many different ways that seeds get planted and watered, and that God could be using even the smallest thing that to me seems like, oh, this is probably a throwaway, but I just never know. You don't know what God is doing in someone's heart and mind. You don't know how he can use you. So as much as you can, keep that open, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great idea to ask, you know, would you permit me? And then if they say no, it's on them, and they have to lie to themselves to say that it was you. Right. And so I think that's a really wise way to approach that. And just remember that their sin and their offense is not against you. It is against God. Like, you may feel offended by the things they're saying or doing, but ultimately their sin is against God. And so I'm not their judge. I am, you know, obviously going to stand firm on what God's word says, and I'm going to point to the truth, but that sin is not primarily offending me, you know? And so I think that helps kind of keep us in right perspective with people. Mm-hmm. I want to shift back to something that we talked about a little bit earlier, preparing young kids, because I have a lot of moms listening to this. And, you know, although we ourselves are dealing with this in real time with relationships, with brothers and sisters and cousins and nephews and nieces, we are dealing with it. How do we help our kids be prepared, have language, you know, and I know this will depend on the age, but let me start here. What is your perspective on the whole, I don't want to tell my kids something because I don't want to ruin their innocence? Because that's what I hear the most often from moms when we bring these topics up, is they're very concerned about ruining the innocence. And so they don't want to tell their kids that, like, hey, Uncle Billy is gay. That's not his friend. That's his boyfriend. You know, they don't want to tell them that because they don't want to ruin the innocence. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, first off, a lot of kids don't even understand what a boyfriend is like. So I remember when one of my nephews, I won't embarrass him and say which one it was, but he was insistent. My mom, it's a long story, but her grandma name was Ruru. She was aiming for something else, but the only thing they picked up on was Rue. So then they started calling her Ruru. And he was just insistent. He wanted to marry Ruru one day. Like, can't we get married? And there's like a video out there of this little boy talking about he wants to marry his mom. And she's like, you can't do that. He's like, why not? You know, they think getting married just means you get to spend all this time together. Right. So we just have to acknowledge that they may not even know what certain categories are. But when it comes to preparing them for knowing that something is different here, it's going to have to be a conversation at some point. So I recommend there's kind of four steps going through that you really, really reinforce from the time that they're young. And the first one is, I call it the made in the image of God game, of who or what is made in the image of God. And so you ask them, is that woman over there made in the image of God? Yes. Is it, what about that man over there? What about that clown? And you'd be surprised at, there's some kids that are like, oh, I don't know, a clown. You're like, no, there's a human in there and he's made in the image of God. What about that man who is a quadriplegic? Well, God's not, you know, God's not a quadriplegic. You're right. He's not, but he's human. So he's made in the image of God. And so you pick as many different things that might trip them up where someone counts as a human. And say they are made in the image of God. You can even put in some things that they would love. Like, is that puppy made in the image of God? No, that puppy is not. He's great. He's cute. We should film him. But not made in the image of God. That beautiful flower, not made in the image of God. God still created it, not made in the image of God. So once they have this established category of who or what is made in the image of God, humans, then we establish the category of how do we treat humans made in the image of God? And that's with dignity and respect and love. And so they know we treat them with all these, you know, the way that they would want to be treated. But then we move to step three, and we're going to differentiate between people who are made in the image of God and people who are reflecting the image of God. And so this can be, you know, when that person cussed us out, you know, at the counter in Safeway, were they reflecting the image of God? No. What about that person who just, you know, stole a bunch of stuff, that person who was beating up the man on the news? No, that's not reflecting God's image. But then you make it personal. So, you know, when they do something that disobeys, you can say, I love you so much. You were made in the image of God, and you were worthy of dignity and respect and love. But the actions you just did not reflect God's image. And in this kind of instance, it makes it personal of like, oh, I'm made in the image of God. And sometimes I don't reflect God's image. We have now created a category of ontology, made in the image of God. This is the identity versus versus a behavior not reflecting the image of God. And they themselves, your little darlings, are not exempt from behaviors that don't reflect the image of God. And once you have really firmly established these three categories, now it's so much easier when they see something, they're saying, that doesn't seem right. And you're like, you're right. Are they made in the image of God? Yes. Is what they're doing reflecting the image of God? No. Does that make them worse than anybody else? Are there times that you don't reflect the image of God? Absolutely. What about mommy? Does mommy always reflect the image of God? No. So we just have different ways that we don't reflect the image of God. And this kind of robs that people think that these different kinds of sins that they're going to have their own special category, where we need to bring it back down to where we're equal at the foot of the cross. And they can handle it, and just remind them, everybody's going to have different ways that they don't reflect God's image. Even you, even mom, even dad.
Yeah. Would you say also, I mean, depending on the age though, like my kids understand that, you know, someone who's a Christian is obviously going to be, you're going to be held to God's standard, and we should hold each other to God's standard. To someone who isn't, like, although we're all made in the image of God, it doesn't mean we're all counted as righteous. We're not all children of God, right?
Yeah, my pastor used to say, you need to put up your deputy Holy Spirit badge. That it's not always our job to go tell us, to go tell other people that what they're doing is not reflecting God's image. That is not our job. It is the Spirit's job to convict. And so that's one of the things where you're like, is it your job to go tell them that they're not reflecting the image of God? No. Now, I, as your parent, have this you know, I am required by God to do this. When you are acting in a way that is not reflecting his image, that, you know, we have discipline and we do these things, that is a product of a relationship. And we'll say, like, if they have people who claim to be Christians in their lives, yeah, we need to hold each other accountable, but mm-hmm. it is not our job to proclaim to other people. We will silently know, hey, that's a way that they're not reflecting the image of God, just like I have things, so I can still love them, but it's not my job to go and tell them. And that's one of the things that's hard with little kids, is they feel like as soon as they know something, they want to go tell everybody. I kind of jokingly refer to this as the you're going to hell stage in development, that once kids really understand what Christianity is, they want to go and tell everybody, you're going to hell, you're going to hell. And, you know, not the greatest way to go about spreading the gospel.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a developmental stage for kids, so we need to be aware of that, and so they know what to say and what not to say.
Yeah And I just think, even for the clarity, for kids to understand and know that, you know, the reason this person is not acting in a way that would represent God's image, like you described, is because they're not in right relationship with him. They're not a Christian. They're not following Jesus. They're not even professing to be, you know, they're an enemy of God, and they are outside of relationship with him. And so that is how we all are outside of Christ. Without Jesus, we would all pursue everything that we wanted, every gluttonous desire, every sinful, selfish urge, unhinged. We would all do that. And yet the only reason that you and I desire to glorify God and desire to obey his word is because God has given us a new heart. And so, I mean, I think it's critical that kids understand that there are different categories there, and that we're not all just, you know, oh yeah, we're all sinful and everybody sins, right? Because yes, however, when we sin, we repent, versus those who are outside of Christ don't repent when they sin. They are carried away even further, right? By every wind of doctrine, they are tossed about to and fro, and they're essentially slaves to sin, whereas we are slaves to righteousness. And so there's a different category there. And of course, we're not going to go and tell that person, you know, hey, you're a slave to sin and you're going to hell. That's not what I tell my girls at all. But I do want them to understand, you know, hey, this person that, you know, I'm telling you, we're not going to say that pronoun. We're not going to say the thing that they say to say. The reason that we disagree on that is because they're not following Jesus. They don't know him. They don't love him. They haven't given their life to him. And we need to pray for them. Like, that needs to be our heart posture. I want you to understand kind of the difference there, that, like, not everyone is a Christian, you know? And I feel like as a child, I kind of grew up thinking, like, everyone mostly agrees with me. I live in America. Everyone mostly probably believes in God. And I felt like I was very much thrown into the deep end, going to a big public university after being homeschooled and private schooled, you know, being thrown into really the deep end of realizing, like, whatever. I feel like it was not a service to me that I was very unaware of how, you know, of, I guess, just how the world really worked. So that's something that I'm seeking to help them understand and have a grasp on.
Yeah. And I don't think we can necessarily always be able to say, I think that's when it moves a little bit from identifying actions to judging the soul, because people are in different levels of growth where maybe we don't know that all the stuff that they gave up, and the Lord is still ridding them of a lot of these things. I'm thankful that he doesn't basically strip all the layers of the onion at the same time. I'll give an example of a woman that I met when I was giving a talk, and she was saying how the Lord had brought her out of feminism, and, you know, she was just a staunch feminist, and then just through it was either a feminist or a lesbian. I can't remember.
Oh, was it Rosaria Butterfield?
No, this is a woman that, like, was at our church. And and so she was saying, you know, but the Lord was really working on me in this area and in this area. And I've eventually realized, yeah, he's absolutely right. So I realized this woman is listening to the Lord. She is learning. He is working on her. But she said, but I still can't go pro-life. I'm still pro-choice. And at that point, I didn't feel like my job was to say, well, you have to give up that one too, even though she does. I said, you know what? I said to her, I said, you know what? You and I disagree on that. And it is clear to me that you are listening to the Lord in these other areas. And so I trust that he's going to teach you on that one as well. And so it's not pronouncing saying you're not a Christian because you haven't gotten there yet. I know other Christians who it takes them a long time to get out of certain things.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of allowing them to be on that journey and not saying that person doesn't love God, that person doesn't love Jesus.
Well, and just to be clear, I wasn't talking about other Christians. I'm talking about people who don't even, they're not saying they're Christians. People who are professed, you know,
professed non-Christians.
100%. Yes. Professed non-Christians, not those who are
wayward at the moment.
Wayward. Right. Or confused. You know, just because we do have some people in our life who are, you know, very anti-God, like would, you know, totally say, like, I think that what you believe is garbage, you know? And so it's, you know, it just depends on, I think, who's in your community? Who are your, who are you actually, who has God put in your circle of influence, right? Because he's sovereign. And if you have those people in your life and those relationships, like, we have to wisely walk and you know, as much as we can at their age, like, equip our kids and teach them. So, you know, getting kind of wrapping up, if there's one thing you found that kind of encourages and frees people in these conversations, what would that be? Is there, like, one aha moment that you find moms just go, oh my goodness, that's such encouragement, or that's what I needed to hear on any one of these topics, or just even overall?
I can tell you which one has been kind of like a real aha for me. And mm-hmm. then I've had other women that are around me saying that was an aha moment yeah. for them, is recognizing the role of sex as being a covenant renewal ceremony. And so this is one of those things where, especially with little kids, just establishing a category that there's things that you can do with your body that point back to a promise you've already made. Like, I saw a sermon by a man, sent me a sermon based on the book a couple weeks ago, and it was such a good sermon. So he had someone come up there and they did this little secret handshake, and that meant I will. And then he patted four times, "I will never lie to you." And so he didn't have to say it over and over again. They mm-hmm. would do this handshake. It means "I will never lie to you." It's something physical that's pointing back to a promise that was made. Just like God has covenant signs. The rainbow, he doesn't have to tell us over and over again, he's never going to flood the whole earth. Mm-hmm. Every time that rainbow comes out, that's a covenant sign. Mm-hmm. The covenant sign of circumcision, that this is saying, "I have set you apart as a people." He didn't have to say it 1,000 times. Mm-hmm. It every time someone is circumcised, or they see themselves circumcised, they know that that is a symbol, a right. physical symbol of a promise that was already made. So if we can get that category into our kids' heads mm-hmm. of that sex, we don't have to go into all the mechanics. They don't need to know what it is. That's something very private that a husband and wife do to point back to the promises that they made on their wedding day. And then for people who are married, saying, "This is what this covenant renewal ceremony is meant to be. It is meant to point back to those promises." And if you're treating your sex life in a way that would never reflect the promises that you made on that wedding day, well, then maybe you need to look at what message you're sending. Or if you are not living up to any of the promises that you made, maybe that might make sense of why either your husband or wife is not as excited about being intimate, because you're trying to go through this renewal ceremony of pointing back to the promises that you made, but you're not actually behaving according mm-hmm. to those promises. And so right. it just kind of changes the perspective of sex. It changes the perspective of what does it mean to have sex outside of marriage. Well, it's basically a lie, because you can't point back to a promise that you never made. You can't point back to a covenant that you never made. And so this, I think, was a big aha moment. Especially for someone that I knew personally, she was saying why she didn't understand why she and her fiance couldn't have sex. And when she understood that, she's like, "Oh, this totally yeah. makes sense." Right. So it's something that can be told to kids very, very young. And it's something that can be told to teens as they're struggling. And it's something that can be told to married couples who are maybe mm-hmm. struggling with aspects of their sexual relationship. It's something that is just symbolic for everybody mm-hmm. And imperative for understanding what sex was created to be.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I just appreciate your time and your wisdom and everything you guys have done. These books are literally a goldmine. Encourage everyone to grab it. If you don't have it already, you need this on your bookshelf. And I'd encourage you to just kind of, you know, study them and use them as ways to have conversations with your kids that are age appropriate. There's definitely good suggestions in here of how to do that from kids as young as probably like 4 or 5 all the way mm-hmm. through, you know, the teenager and adult years. So yeah.
I would say one more thing. And for sure. some reason, Amazon is not really showing this. There's a study guide that goes along with this that we call a discipleship workbook, because it has even more activities
okay.
that you could do with your kids that were not like, you know, there's this, I call it the oppressive mistress of word count for, yeah. for books that we couldn't fit into the book, but we put it into the study guide. And so it's got a lot of really great extra activities to do with your kids to get these concepts across that then you can yeah. fit the specific ideas into them.
That's so cool. That sounds like it'd be great for like a homeschool curriculum too. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay. I'm going to get that one ordered, because I don't have that. Well, thank you for your time. And people can find you online at Mama Bear Apologetics. Where mm-hmm. else can they follow you?
Instagram is probably where I'm the most responsive, and Facebook. Okay. Amy kind of takes care of the Twitter sphere, or X, mm-hmm. whatever it's called now. And so, yeah, just, and on our website, there is a place where if you have a specific question that you can send us to ask the Mama Bears at gmail.com, or you can go through the contact page on the website.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Hillary. It's been great chatting with you.
Yeah, me too.
As always, thanks for listening. I hope that encouraged and edified you. And just know that so many of us are walking through difficult situations with loved ones, family members, and friends who are asking and begging us to compromise on biblical truth. And although we love them and never want to shut them out of our lives as a result of difference of beliefs, in fact, we hope to keep the channels open in order to share hope and truth and ultimately the gospel with them, we have to remember that their hearts are not in our hands, and that the timing of that is not up to us. And so even if you are walking through a very painful and difficult situation where someone has closed you out of their life and someone has kind of sworn you off and said that they don't want anything to do with you, I just want to encourage you to not stop praying for them. No one is beyond God's reach. As long as there is breath in their lungs, it is still the day of salvation. And so it's never too late. And I've been the person who has definitely stopped praying for people in the past. And when God actually moved in their lives and brought them to a saving faith, and they came back around to relationship with
with me, I realized that the only thing that cost me was getting to be a part of God working and getting to take such joy and delight in seeing Him answer prayers, because I wasn't praying them. So as hard as it is, I know, believe me, I really do know how difficult it is to be in these spots. Just keep praying for them. Keep praying that God would soften their hearts, that He would give you opportunities, and that He would make you bold and loving in the face of those chances to share the gospel with them. All right, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week, and I will see you next time.